Major Horridge, Reel 4. Could you tell me how you were treated after you were wounded?
Yes, I think I've already stated that I was laid on the far step of the trench until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, when I was ordered to go down the line to be treated in hospital. From about 4 o'clock, and assisted by two medical fellows. There were no stretchers available, although it had been used up a long time before. Anyway, I was assisted down, and eventually I came across an officer I knew in the support line, who offered me a cup of tea and said he could try to get me a stretcher, which he did. And I then carried on down into one of the mule tracks. I think the mule tracks were termed the Eastern Mule Track and the Western Mule Track. This, I think, was the Eastern Mule Track. And I was laid on one side of this mule track, which is fairly wide, of course, and many other stretchers were there, all in line. And I stayed there the night. I'd been to a dressing station, and I'd had a red label stuck onto me, which suggested that I'd been seriously wounded and needed special care, I suppose. But in actual fact, I don't think this was correct, because actually the bullet had never really entered into me. It had gone in, hit my ribs, and come out again. It had never gone through any of the workings of my inside. And so I lay in this mule trench until morning, and then we were taken off onto a hospital ship, or at least a ship acting as a hospital ship, which I have no idea what the name was. As an officer, I was put in a cabin, but this ship was full of wounded, lying all over the decks, and anywhere we could put wounded. Fellows were dying. Ship stopped every now and again to bury them. And, well, you've asked me how I was treated. I wasn't seriously wounded, as it turned out. And I was treated perfectly all right, and nothing whatsoever to complain of. There were no women on board the ship. There were no nurses of that description. They were all men, medical orderlies, who were running the thing from the ship. And that's the way I got to Alexandria.
Were you in pain?
Pardon?
Were you in pain?
Well, a certain amount of pain from this wound. And as I didn't tell you, when I was actually wounded, I didn't realise till an hour later that the bullet had gone through my arm as well. No, I wasn't in what you call great pain, but I was stiff, and seemed to stiffen you all over to this shot. It wasn't just a pain where it was. You seemed to go stiff all over.
Did you hope you were going to be sent back to the UK?
No, I didn't. We'll go to the UK.
Yes.
Well, I never thought that likely. Not at that stage, because nobody had gone back to the UK. We only went to hospitals in Mudros or Alexandria. Didn't seem to be any hope of getting back to the UK. Our officers of the division had been allowed, when we spent the 8 months in Egypt, to come out to their wives, and some of ours had come out. I was put into a hospital, but after a certain length of time I was able to walk about. And I remember one day going to have my wound dressed, a chap walked in without any jaw on. And this was a very nasty shock. It was a terrible thing to see. He'd had his dressings taken off, and there he was without a jaw. And I remember thinking to myself for quite a time, nothing will ever get me back into this war again. This thing's too horrible for words. I'm not going to go back to that again and help him. And time went on, and last I was allowed to walk about, I used to go out and call upon our officer wives, And my company commander's wife was there, and there was typhoid about, and she got, fortunately, got typhoid and eventually died there. And then, as time went on and I began to feel better, I began to get a bit worried about the fact that I was no longer with the men I'd trained for 8 months. And I began to think, it's time you got back to your own chaps who are still out of Gallipoli. So this feeling that I was never going to go back again gradually disappeared, and I applied to go back, which just shows you the recuperative method of youth. I was prepared to go back again, and so I was sent back 5 weeks after I was wounded, with a dressing on my wound. And I returned back, and we landed again at Cape Helles, and our battalion was, the division was in the front line, and as I and two or three others on the draft who'd come with me were walking up to the front line, who should we meet but the divisional commander, Major General Douglas. So he stopped us and talked. He said, you'll soon have an opportunity of getting your own back against the Turks, which I thought was the worst bit of news I heard for a long time. And that was our little conversation with Major General Douglas. I got back into the front line, and the following day was the battle between the 52nd Division, which was just on our right, on the 15th, I think it would be, of July. And from where my position was, and a bit higher ground, I could watch this attack going on.
What could you see?
I could see the Scotties in their kilts and things going, advancing and being shot down. They lost a lot of casualties. And my job, of course, I had a job as well. Our job was to fire over the top of our trench at the Turkish trenches to keep the heads down. And I lost two men out of the platoon shot through the head while this was going on. So that was my first day back again.
Which part of the front line were you holding?
Somewhere to the right of Krithia Nulla. I couldn't exactly tell you where it was. The trenches were numbered, like K-10, K-11, J-10, and so on. And I think we were in a trench called K-11. But it was the front line, and it was somewhere to the right of Krithia Nulla. And I don't think it was, I think it was to the left of Achibaba Nulla. In fact, I think Achibaba Nulla was just on our right, because I remember that the end of the trench ran out into the Nulla. And I remember going down to this particular end of the trench one day and seeing an old soldier in my platoon who'd fought the Kitchener in the Sudan. He was sitting there with his leg held out, and he was saying to some chap, come and sit here, put your leg out, they're coming down here. So what he was trying to do was to get a blighty without us being a self-inflicted wound.
Was this
of course there were self-inflicted wounds, which were very serious.
Did you take any action against this chap?
No. He didn't get a shot in his leg.
How long were you posted at this point?
We were in that trench for about 7 or 8 days. And on one occasion, a sergeant called Hutchinson was altering a sandbag. The Turks, I suppose, would be about 150 yards away. They had taken a sandbag down to put it up properly. And he suddenly put the sandbag down and walked away. I said to him, what's the matter, Sergeant? He said, there was a face looking at me. Then he realised that he thought he'd been seeing something. Anyhow, he rushed back and put the sandbag back. And there's no doubt what he'd seen was a listening patrol of the Turks.
They came that close, did they?
Yes, sometimes they must have done. Well, each side sent out these patrols, you know, at night.
Did you ever lead a patrol out?
No, I never led a patrol out. Not then. I did in France. I led a fighting patrol into a wood in France, but I never did in Gallipoli. Being a company commander, I wasn't a company commander, beg your pardon. I was second lieutenant. I was never ordered to do so.
Were you under any greater shell fire here in this frontline sector?
No, the shelling wasn't really heavy in Gallipoli, not on the frontline trenches. We once did get bombed by a Mini, a type of Mini. The Turks didn't have Minis, you know, like the Germans had in France. And as I said, we had no bombs, and they had a kind of stick bomb, which was German, of course, because they had some German officers amongst them. They had some stick bombs. But if you were in the line and there wasn't a battle, you were more or less fairly safe. It wasn't too bad at all. Except for the flies, of course, by this time.
Did you do any sniping? Or did your battalion?
Oh, yes. There were loopholes. There were metal plates put up with loopholes in. And you had your crack riflemen firing through these. There were snipers every so often along the trench. And the Turks had their snipers too.
Did you actually try any sniping?
Personally? Hmm. No. Well, it wasn't my job. It wasn't really theoretically carrying a rifle. I was carrying a revolver. We didn't have our swords, of course, in Gallipoli, but we had a revolver.
Were you within range of bombing? Did you bomb each other?
Not in that particular trench. No, it was too far away. You couldn't chuck a bomb that's more than about 40 yards. If that, you had to be very good to get it more than about 25 yards. But while I was in this trench, I did go into another company's part of the same trench, where their trench was only 25 yards from the Turks. And I think they could hear each other talking and that. But there was no attack made while we were in the trench. And then after that, of course, we were taken out and had a period of rest for a short time.
Were you under enfilade? Were you being enfiladed, or could the Turks look down on you at all?
No, not then. No, not at that time. No.
You mentioned the flies had got worse by now. Could you tell me in what way they were a nuisance?
Yes. What started the flies? I don't know, because there were no bother with any flies until I was wounded on the 4th of June. When I got back on the 15th of August, then the flies were there in enormous numbers. I just think it's almost impossible for anybody who didn't experience it to realise what it was like. It was as though a swarm of gnats that you see in a garden in the summertime was over all the trench, all the frontline trenches and that. And they were a type of green, smallish green blue bottles. And they were buzzing around top of your trench all the time. Any food that was there, if you put a bit of bread out openly, it would be covered with flies within 10 seconds. And as you ate, you had to wave your hand over the top of your bread and jam or whatever you were eating. Before you put it in your mouth, all flies got in with it. They were terrible pests, and they were there ever after sunrise until sunset, when they disappeared and lived on the dead bodies in no man's land, and possibly the latrines, which was, of course, the reason why so many people were hit by tummy trouble, dysentery, and so on. And if I may mention here, to me, it's a complete miracle that cholera never broke out on Gallipoli, because it is a fact that in the Crimean War, the troops on the way to the Crimea landed at the town called Gallipoli, which is on the peninsula, of course, and cholera started in those days in the Crimean War. I'm quite sure in the Crimean War they didn't live so near to each other and they didn't live so close to dead bodies as we did. But I think it's the most remarkable thing that cholera never broke out.
Could you see these dead bodies from where you were?
Oh yes, you could see them. And you see it was so hot and the sun was strong, so that it sounds very horrible, but I'm expected to tell the truth. These bodies would swell up and then burst. And you couldn't send anybody out to bury them because the Turks fired all night and, well, it was just like, might as well be killed going out to try to bury them. We buried those behind our front line, but you couldn't bury those in no man's land.
Did they smell a lot?
Yeah, they did, yes. I've heard it said that people approaching Gallipoli in ships could smell it.
But you didn't experience that yourself?
Well, I suppose we did, but I suppose you got used to it. If you live in a smell long enough, I suppose you get used to it.
The health of the troops began to fade?
Yes, it began to fade. Certainly it was fading when I got back again on July the 15th. And I got the stomach trouble, which was not serious dysentery, but a bad tummy trouble, and I was sent off to Mudros Hospital for a fortnight, somewhere about the 2nd or 3rd of August.
And how were you treated at Mudros Hospital?
Well, I was fed on Ideal milk. I got a basin of Ideal milk for breakfast, another basin of Ideal milk for lunch, another basin of Ideal milk for my evening meal, and nothing solid to eat. Well, all I can say about that is that to some people Ideal milk may taste very nice until you've had 10 basins full, but when you've had about 30, you loathe the stuff. You can't imagine anything worse than having to drink this stuff. So at the end of a fortnight, I declared I was better. I wanted to get back to Gallipoli, which was even better on Gallipoli than it was drinking this Ideal milk every meal.
Do you think you'd been properly recovered from your first wound when you got back to Gallipoli? Because you seem to have fallen ill rather...
I don't think I had been, really, to tell you the truth. I think I was still suffering a bit of effect from it. I'd had a plaster on it, so I don't think I should have gone back so soon. But at any rate, I wasn't the only one, of course, that was affected by this, so it might just have been a case of I was affected by it. Some people were affected, but didn't get it bad enough to leave. I know one chap who was still bothered with tummy trouble, but he never actually left the peninsula.
Did the troops look any different?
I don't remember they looked different, but you see, after I got back, and after the, and I told you I got back on the 15th of August, there'd then been the attack at Souffle Bay and the attack by the Anzacs to help the landing at Souffle Bay. The 29th Division were moved to Souffle, and our division, instead of being in the centre, took over the land of the 29th Division, which was on the left, and it was our duty to go into the front line up Gully Ravine. And Gully Ravine is, I suppose, something like 3 miles long, at least, I expect, to the front line. And it took us a little bit of time because we had our equipment. We had, don't forget, we always had 200 rounds of ammunition to carry. And we used to have to rest every 20 minutes, whereas the normal time was 10 minutes every hour. We had to rest every 20 minutes. Everybody was more or less feeling off and poorly and weak through all this tummy trouble we were getting through the flies.
Where did you go from Gully Ravine?
We spent our time in the trenches at the top of the gully. I had a bit of the trench called Fusilier Bluff, which is about the furthest north we ever got on near the coast. It was really on a level with Krithia. And my company, which, when we landed on Gallipoli, were four companies of 250. At this time I'm talking about, 15th of August, there were only two companies of 60 men each, 30 on headquarters, and the battalion had been reduced from 1,000 to 150. And so my company of 60 men, I had one officer, there were only six officers. There was the CO, who had been our adjutant, Major Wood, a Captain Bentley, who was acting as our adjutant, and the four company commanders and second in command were second lieutenants. And our job was to go to the top of the gully, man the trenches around that particular part, that was our sector. In fact, one of the trenches is called Berry Trench.
And that was named after your...
Yes, I think it's on the trench map.
With the...
Might as well add that when we'd done our turn of the line, we went back to the beach, which is called Gully Beach, and we lived amongst the cliffs and things that ran down to the sea.
With all these casualties and with the health problems, what was the morale like in your unit? Was the strain of being under fire getting
through? Well, I think the morale was going down by this time. Nobody felt fit enough to do anything. I think the morale was really going down. I think everybody wished to God the whole thing were over.
How did this show itself, this feeling of...
Well, the Tommy doesn't grumble much, you know. He just plods on, doesn't he? Very great, great lads, you know.
But how could you tell what they were feeling? In what way did it show?
They didn't say much.
It was just
a
feeling.
Didn't say much, yeah.
Could you describe what you could see in Gully Ravine? Because that was the main...
Well, Gully Ravine was very deep. Now, I read in a book that the only way into the gully from the eastern side was down the zigzag. But it's not true, because I've already said in my talks here that we went down a road called Artillery Road. But otherwise, it was very difficult because it was very deep. And there were trees and all sorts of things growing on the sides of the gully. And the other side of the gully, on the west side, was just as bad. And I couldn't say how deep it was. It's very difficult to say. I should think three times the size of a very big house.
What was it? Was it a scene of great activity, the gully, by this stage?
The gully was mostly a passage for troops to go up and down. And as it was summer, there was only a little trickle of water came down the gully. There wasn't very much water. It was quite all right to walk up right to the front line gully.
We mentioned briefly earlier the self-inflicted wounds. Were there any other aspects of military discipline, any other offences that were starting to creep in? Were there any sleeping on sentry duty or that sort
of
thing?
Well, you see, we dealt with that sort of thing ourselves, I think, because as an officer, and I think the others who did the same thing, we knew what a very serious matter it was to be court-martialed for being asleep on sentry duty. Also, it was a serious matter if you found somebody asleep as an officer, you didn't report the matter. So what we used to do was to go down the trenches, and if we thought the chap was asleep, we'd knock his legs from under him and then go on 20 yards, then turn back, come and talk to him. And he was invariably awake then. So we didn't go in for trying to get anybody court-martialed if we could possibly help it.
Were there any other sort of offences?
I don't think, other than a few self-inflicted wounds. People used to shoot themselves with the foot or perhaps with the hand or something like that. But not many.
Would this be obvious that it was self-inflicted?
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, yeah. Somebody seen it. You see, you didn't get away from everybody in the trench.
Were you still living in a sort of dugout affair? Did you have your own
dugout? No, not in these trenches. There was not in the front-line trenches. There were no dugouts.
So where did you sleep?
Oh, you slept anywhere you could, at the bottom of the trench. Or on the fire step, or something like that. There were no dugouts.
Did you have any special duties?
You mean with regard to bombing?
Yes, as bombing officer.
Well, as there were no such things as mill bombs, hand grenades, at all on Gallipoli, as it was, of course, only 8 months after the war started, we had to manufacture our own bombs, and they were made out of bomb tins, out of jam tins, with an explosive inside, a stone inside, and eventually they were lit by a fuse which poked into the top of the thing, which was supposed theoretically to be lit by a match and a matchbox, but actually were always lit by a cigarette. And this fuse lasted 7 seconds before it went off, and so you held it for 3 seconds and counted 1, 2, 3, and then you threw it, and if you threw it too soon, there was always the chance that the enemy would throw it back again. And that was what we did to make our own bombs.
You actually supervised that, did you?
Well, I was sent as the officer to find out how to make the bombs. So I was really the first bombing officer ever to be in the battalion. The other occasion I had to do with a bombing school, this was, not where they made bombs, but where they taught people how about bombing and how to throw the bombs properly. I was sent as in charge of a fatigue party to this bombing school, which was run by a major, and we were set to work to dig some trenches, and the orders that I had received was to take the men there. We'd come away at 5 o'clock because we were going into the front line again that night. So I got the men there, and the major came out of his dugout and saw me and told us what we had to do. So I set them at work and I stayed with them and did possibly help a bit myself. And in about half an hour, he appeared from his dugout and came to me and said, "Now your men are not working very well. You'll have to stay an hour longer than the time you've been told." So I said, "Well, we're told to go at 5 o'clock. We're going up into the front line." So he said, "Well, never mind. You've not been working very well and you'll have to stop till 6 o'clock. So I didn't like that much. I didn't think the men would like it either. So when he's gone down a dugout again, I went to our battalion headquarters and saw the CO and told him. He said, "Well, we received this original order from brigade. You'd better go and see the brigadier."